Welcome to another episode of Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine. I'm Shelley Wrench, along with Dr. Nash Gabriel with the Gabriel Cancer Center. And today, I think you wanted to talk about something that's really near and dear to your heart and something that really is the crux behind Gabriel Cancer Center, and that's efficiency.
I think we're going to talk about golf. That's the nearest thing to my heart.
Oh, that's later on.
You missed that one, Shelley. Efficiency. I tell you what, you know, I'm efficient, right?
Extremely efficient.
Sometimes the extreme, right. I remember when I was a child, I multitasked. Even my older sister noticed that, and she was very smart. She's a physician, of course.
Well, and don't forget, too, you're the boss of 46 employees, so you have a lot of people around you helping to maintain efficiency.
Right, and that's important to mention because I might be extreme in criticizing the non-efficient.
Non-efficient people just don't last.
But there are. My job is today. Our job is to make it positive. What is inefficiency rampant in the healthcare system? Is it bad? And how bad is it? And are there things we can do to correct it? The best way to do it, Shelley, is an example. There was a story last week. You remember the details. What was it?
About the patient needing to get in to have the biopsy done?
A liver biopsy. So this is a patient who has a mass in the pancreas, which is always bad, bad, bad news. That's the worst cancer that you can imagine. I hate it. And spots in the liver and obstructive jaundice. And I wanted a biopsy. So I said, guys, schedule a CT guided biopsy, ultrasound biopsy of the liver, whatever it is.
Yeah, you left it up to their choice of which way they want to go.
And the appointment they gave was 19 days from now, from the day we called. 19 days.
And a pancreatic cancer life, that's a long.
You know, Shelley, one thing they didn't teach us in medicine, medical school, I wish they did. They never taught us, whenever you see a patient, just close your eyes and imagine it was you or your loved ones. What would you do? There was one case in my medical education in Scotland where, I'm just talking about the importance of us healthcare professionals, whether physicians, whether receptionists, whether lab technician, whether a nurse. Whenever we see a patient, especially dealing with deadly serious disease, like cancer, before Christmas, to be given that diagnosis, just put yourself in their shoes and say, what can I do to make this pain a little bit less painful? So in Scotland, I remember once, we were sitting doing ground rounds and the intern was presenting a case. And the professor said, so what do you do? And the guy said, I'll do barium enema. The chief radiology, he looked at him, he said, guys, I think I'm going to put a new rule. Every single medical student on the day of a graduation will give them barium enema so that they know how it feels like.
Yeah.
That was the first time I heard somebody saying, when you feel it yourself, you will have a different attitude. So this lady is finally, we end up solving the problem by having some connections.
Yeah, inside connections.
And it is disgusting.
But even our connection on the inside, she was so disgusted because she knows the inefficiencies. And so that's why she said, this is what I deal with. And this is why I struggle every single day.
Now, the question is, was that, you will not mention the hospital. Was that department, is it that busy that they couldn't do it until 19 days from now? If so, why don't they solve the problem?
Right. Work a little bit longer hours. You know, this is the thing, you know, we're very efficient in seeing new patients. We see new patients within 24 to 48 hours.
Same day,
if we can. Established patients, they just walk in. It's just a rotating door. They just come in and sit down. We take care of them. And when I talk to other administrators of cancer centers around the U.S.
You mentioned this before. Go ahead.
Yes. And I talked to them and they said, well, you know, how long does it take for you guys to see a new patient? I said, you know, within a day. And they said, how do you do that? And I said, well, how many days is it that you guys are waiting? And they said, oh, typically it's like 6 to 7 weeks. And I said, so has it always ran like 6 to 7 weeks? And they said, yes. I said, you're really keeping caught up. You just have to work your butt off for 6 or 7 weeks and get
caught
up.
Catch up, and then you'll be on time.
Exactly.
Over.
And they all look at me like I have 3 heads.
4 heads.
Yeah.
Remember once we in this profession, again, we had to put ourselves in patients' shoes. Many years ago, one of the local hospitals decided to have a cancer center. They hired an oncologist, and the guy disappeared. And next day, he wasn't there, although the hospital knew, but they had some business deal, whatever it was. All I know was those patients, hundreds of patients who are getting chemo, they don't have an oncologist. You remember what we did? We opened the weekend.
Yeah.
I actually canceled golf 2 days in a row.
And that takes a lot.
That takes a lot. But you know what? I just imagine if these people had chemo and their blood count is dropping, my gosh, what's going to happen to them? They might die. I know it wasn't our fault. I had nothing to do with it because these are his patients. But ultimately, this, you know, these are patients, right? And ultimately, this is our home. This is our town. And we solve the problem. So why don't these practices, these hospitals, these offices, why don't they just open a damn weekend and skip golf for God's sake? Actually, you don't have to skip golf. You can play in the afternoon and open the office in the morning on a Friday, Saturday, right?
Right.
You can still do it.
Or golf early and get into the office by noon.
Or for 6 weeks, and instead of working 8 to 4, make it 8 to 5.
Right.
And what's wrong with that? And you will catch up and everything is good. But that's not the problem. It is not that the hospital is so overwhelmed with the work. It's something else. That's something else somebody opened my eyes to 2 days ago. A patient who was seen by somebody else, a hematologist, and they called to make a follow-up, and the follow-up was 3.5 months from now.
3.5 months?
Months. And the patient has some blood disease that can give him strokes and heart attacks. The family doc, who's a friend of mine, actually he's a member of my book club, he simply didn't even call me. He just called, had the staff call our staff and say, can I see the patient? We saw the patient next day. The daughter was impressed. She said, wow, you gave me a cancer and this is your only one here? I said, yes. You're the only doctor? I said, yeah. Why don't you bring some more? I said, your father was seen by a group of some more.
And you see how he was treated?
Yes. Oh, she said, big institutions are inefficient. I said, bingo. And I told her, how many times Michael and Paul, my kids, have been saying, Dad, expand, build cancer centers somewhere else. My response to them is, no. For what? Like, do it like Cancer Centers of America and open another one in Chicago. So I cannot go to Chicago. I'm not going to leave Canada to go to Chicago, right? To practice medicine. So I have to hire somebody to do it there.
Well, and there's not another, there's nobody else like you. I mean,
thank you.
There has to be the same type of philosophy with the person in charge and all the people underneath him or her.
Exactly. You will not go to Chicago or you will not go to Philadelphia to have another Gabriel Cancer Center. You will delegate somebody to go there. And you know how human beings are. Again, there aren't many of you. There are only a few Shelleys in the world. And whatever you can do, you can go and fly there every week. Still, you cannot duplicate what you do here. So I'm happy with a little cohesive organization. I take care of my patients. And I have awesome staff who helped me with that. And I don't think you want to go and help another, open another practice somewhere else.
Well, think about this. We actually did do that for an on-site clinic. We were brought in to do an on-site clinic for a company because of the inefficiency of the hospital in town. The higher cost, the inefficiency. And you remember, we went to try to get health care providers to serve that clinic. And it was impossible to try to find somebody to come in who was not, you know, affiliated with the hospital. So what did we do? We went to the hospital. We said, we want your staff. We contracted with the staff. How did we keep them in compliance with the philosophy that we have?
We were very lucky.
We were very
lucky. The doctor there, De La Rosa, she was very good. She believed. She read my book. She believed that good medicine is cheaper medicine. She also believed that when you minimize financial transactions between the patients and the healthcare facility, you improve access. Access improvement results in better patient care, better outcomes. We were very lucky with her and her assistant.
Her staff, her all three. Because Kendra at the front desk, she was more our employee than she was the hospital, even though we shared her with the hospital. In fact, when I met with the hospital CEO where we were renting the staff from, she came to me one time when I was out visiting and she says, I just don't understand. How is it that they can finish the healthcare providers that go to the clinic can finish their notes before they leave? They're telling me that it's an amazing, EMR, the electronic medical records. What is it? It has something to do with cancer or something. So I told her what it was web-based and they could do it. Actually, so the efficiency there.
Again, today, guys, we're talking about the issue of efficiency or lack of in healthcare institutions and its relationship to the size. They say size doesn't matter. Actually, it does, and negatively so. So, Shelley, what we have witnessed in the last, we all know that big institutions are inefficient. In fact, when you talk to Medicare, when you talk to insurance companies, you ask them, why do you pay hospitals more than you pay us for the same service? Their response is, because hospitals are inefficient. Okay? So if GM makes lousy cars, we still tell people you have to buy GM cars at very high cost because GM is inefficient. Does that make any sense?
No.
Even the insurance industry, a CEO of, no, it was the medical director of, I think it was one of those. He blatantly said, yeah, because they are inefficient. The problem we're facing is there is this phenomena of less small practices, less independent physicians, whether primary care, whether cardiologists, whether oncologists, and more are being bought out by hospitals, right?
Right.
What is that doing to access? What is it doing to the promptness of service? And what's it doing to the cost? Shelley?
It's throwing everything out of the water. I mean, when you put, even when we went to, when we had another oncologist with us for a few years,
yeah.
Just think of the capacity that we didn't increase capacity of patients being seen. We doubled the work that we were doing to try to make it work. So, I mean, just having that experience, that's the only thing I can think of that, you know, from the insider's view, that if we do that, I can only imagine if we would increase it to $3 or $4 or $5.
How is it, Shelley? Listen, there's something very simple. When it's well known to the hospitals, when physicians are bought by a hospital, their productivity drops. Fact. Hence, always the hospitals give a contract for 1 year subject to renegotiation, and that renegotiation usually is downwards, not up.
Yeah, you're out.
or you're out. How is it that the hospitals actually can afford that? I'll give you one example. There used to be a cardiology group in town. They were the biggest group in town called Cardiology One, 14, 15 cardiologists. They disintegrated. Totally gone. What happened was they were bought by Summa. Why did they sell out? It's very simple. When they did an echocardiogram in the office, they get paid, let's say, $50. But if the echo is done at a hospital,
the group gets $50 from the insurance company. Yeah.
Yes. But if the echo is done at a hospital, it's $150. So the hospital said to them, okay, we'll pay you whatever you make now plus 10%. Because they know
they're going to make out of all the ancillary services.
Now, why is it that the government pays the hospitals preferentially more? Is it because they are inefficient, meaning the hospitals? So you have a sympathy to being inefficient? Or is it because of lobbying and politics?
Oh, I'm sure it's the latter. Definitely the latter. In fact, I was just listening yesterday to a Centers for Medicare Services webinar for hospitals, and you're probably thinking, why would I listen to it as a hospital? But it's part of the measures that we all have to, the guidelines and all that kind of stuff that we have to do. And they brought up the one slide was talking about the interoperability measure, which what that is it's how we share records between practices and hospitals. and everybody is scoring so poorly on it in the hospital that they're backing off on it. It's like that's the whole reason that we want to have records shared and interoperability, and they're backing down on the weight of that measure.
When you look at the United States, and let's compare it to places I have been to, England, the UK is very much like our system when it comes to the economics and business. But compared to Iraq, or what I heard from the Soviet Union, where everything is owned by big conglomerates. You know, I'm a capitalist, free market and all that stuff. I just don't like when I see the Google that's now worth $780 billion, that's close to a trillion. I don't like it as a monopoly, but at the same time, I truly believe these big companies, the bigger they grow, the less innovation you get. There is a reason why Americans are proud that 70% of jobs in America are by small businesses, and the definition of small business is 300 employees or less. That correlates with the productivity, with accuracy, with the quality of care, and so on. In the healthcare system, we say we have a lot of patients who come from Cleveland, Columbus, and so on. They actually see that their service is more prompt and more efficient despite the commute, because we have a system where you just, as a patient, you just don't wait in the waiting room. Somebody told me recently, you go to big institutions like the ones in Cleveland, you go from one cubicle to the other for about 1 hour, and everybody, and it was...
That's after having a long walk from the parking lot.
Secretary of HSS, he was given a talk in May, and there is a video clip. Guys, you just look at Alex, what's his name, Azar. Alex Azar II. Is like a video clip from May. He was talking to American Hospital Association, and he was dismayed. He was sick. He was a patient, some colon probably. He didn't mention exactly what. And remember, the guy has been a healthcare executive for all his life. And he said, I had to repeat my story, my name, my birth date, my social security, my whatever, 17 times to 17 different people. He said, guys, can't you get this straight?
Right. He says,
where is technology?
Can you only imagine if I only had to tell the story once? Because number one, I might forget one part of the story, or number two, the person, the 12th, 13th person might get it wrong, and then I've got errors in the record, and now they're going to treat me based on inaccurate things.
Exactly. So repetition is just like a mutation in DNA. The more you duplicate the DNA, the higher is the chance for mutation, which is an error. So when they have 17 people separately ask the same questions, like medications, allergies, and so on, if one of them make a mistake, then you have to go and redo the whole thing, because how would you reconcile that mistake? The fact is, the likelihood of such errors happening in small operations are less. That's one thing.
Well, I wonder why. Remember when he did that interview, it was during Nurses Week and Hospital Week, right?
Yes.
Where is the week for our community-based smaller practices? We don't have such a week.
We had, unfortunately, the 8 years of the Obama presidency had been not good for us, because President Obama was convinced that healthcare should move in the direction of conglomerate big institutions. He's an American man, and he's free to have his opinion. The problem with that one is, historically, innovation has almost always come from small institutions, not from big ones. And unfortunately also, we are now convinced that there is a direct correlation between the size of the institution and the cost they incur for the same. And Shelley, you have dealt with this. We have patients being treated in MD Anderson, in Cornell University, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic.
Mexico, Puerto Rico.
Venezuela. And you compare the cost incurred by us compared to those people, it's not like there's 10% difference, 20% difference. It's more like 300-400% difference, sometimes 1,000% difference. And it always relates to the size of the institution. big institutions are inefficient, and inefficiency provides less care. Unfortunately, there is a strong correlation between the size of the institution and the cost. Unfortunately also, we are all convinced now that the higher is the cost, the lesser is the outcome.
Right. And part of the Donald Trump's executive order 13813, he also is increasing efforts on monitoring market competition, especially in relation to provider consolidation. That is written right in his executive order. He knows this to be true. He's moving forward with it. So
basically, when you listen to President Trump and to Alex Azar, I think people are wasting their time talking about Obamacare. Oh, the judge in Texas thought it unconstitutional. I don't care. Because honestly, if we do these simple things, everybody will get a nice care at a lower cost. Then Obamacare or any or Trump care or any of that will be irrelevant. Just think about this. The increment in the cost of the drugs between the manufacturer and the patient is 15, 20, 30%. Can we shrink that to 10%? Just that by itself.
Right.
Currently, 90% of the healthcare cost is drugs. Some people say 20, 25%, whatever it is. But if you lower that 20 to make it 18, guess what? You are saving 2% of the total healthcare cost. That can take care of a lot of people.
It sure could.
It could. If we discourage hospitals from acquiring physicians, well, we can't discourage them by slapping on their wrist. Don't do that again. No. Basically, remember we've been fighting with physician organization, fighting for equal, what do you call it, the equal pay or the, where we believe that my service in my office is the same and I should get paid the same whether I'm independent or owned by a hospital. Currently, if I sell out to any of the hospitals, next day, for the same work, I get 38% raise. And that's not right. And there aren't many people who are so sentimental and independent-minded, like us, to stay alive, to stay independent. They're selling out.
You know, the one other thing, too, that I don't think that you're aware of, part of the executive order I was talking about, it also says that they're trying to encourage licenses across states in a reciprocal. So, like you're licensed by the state of Ohio, that you would have reciprocity with another state. That's part of the executive order that he's encouraging states to get it together. So, we've been through this. Mm-hmm. Trying to get state licenses in other states.
They want my records from ISIS. They didn't get them.
Yeah, they're not going to get them. Yeah.
And surely there's another one where opening the market to different insurance companies because there are some restrictions in some states. They don't allow. There are so many things that sound little, but to me, the insurance being open is very important. Once you give a monopoly to people, the repercussions are dangerous. Why? If in one area there's only one or two insurance companies, number one, they kind of have the upper hand on the providers in the area. Hey, I have 50% of the patients in the area. You accept my terms or you will not be a provider. And if you're a physician in town and you have a family, you will suck it up and accept their terms. Number two, they will do the same to the hospital. Number three, they will come to the employers. This is what will cost you. Thank you very much. And by the way, next year there will be 10% raise. Thank you again. That was happening. Somehow, for some reason, we were restricting insurance companies from being free to operate in markets. That's been reversed. You cannot have competition when there's monopoly. It just doesn't work. So there are so many things that we as a society can do instead of just thinking about, we're becoming obsessed with Obamacare. I mean, it just becomes like a real obsession. That obsession is becoming a distraction from the real issues.
I agree.
When I look at a local hospital here in Canton owning 200, 300 physicians, scares the hell out of me. Because you know what they're doing? Number one, those physicians have no right and no authority and no freedom to refer their patients except to physicians in the same group. What does that mean? That means if you have a serious eye problem, that actually there's somebody in town who's unique, take care of it. But that person, that doctor, is not part of the hospital. You will not have a chance to see him. It's illegal, by the way. It's illegal only if you say it blatantly. But as I talked to AltCare one time, 2-3 years ago, I said, go and look at the last 5-10 years of all the colon cancer and breast cancer and see how many were referred to oncologists that were not employed by Altman. They said, really? I said, absolutely. Zero. That restriction of a trade is very dangerous. So when the oncologists employed by Altman, when their referrals are guaranteed, surely they have no incentive to work hard and really serve better. Yeah, we all are physicians. We all want to do the best. But make no mistake about it. Competition brings the best out of our souls.
Absolutely. And I do have to mention, too, that it's not just one hospital that this happens. It's every single hospital.
I'm just one example, Altman, it's every single hospital in the U.S. Some of them have been challenged by court. And unfortunately, they get away with it. People don't actually even know that there is an absolute restriction of trade by hospitals. And all was promoted by the idea of pay the hospitals more in addition to some special juicy government programs. Pay them more, and they use that money to compete with somebody like me, because now if I want to hire an oncologist, I have to match what they pay, meaning the hospital pay, and they make way more than I make for the same service. You hear how it's all revolving? It's time to stop this. And I'm praying that Azar, Agency Secretary, and the government, meaning the president, will pay close attention to this. We don't need to reverse Obamacare. I really don't care.
They need to do what we're exactly talking about today, efficiency. They just need to, you know, take all the redundant things out of our lives to make us more efficient. And that's part of the Patient Server Paperwork Act that they're putting out there as well.
So. They have a lot of ideas. In fact, Agent Secretary thought about the idea that it's not a bad idea to have physicians own hospitals. Please do, if you miss listening to this on the radio, you can always go to the podcast. They are all listed there. Go to GabrielCancerCenter.com and push on the podcast, and you can listen to these programs at your leisure.